What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode 3 of the BFG podcast. I am here with my sometimes friends, sometimes foes, sometimes I don't know what you are. Tyler's here with me today.
Hey.
We've got a jam-packed show for you, so don't mind me if I look over here because we did just write this down and I probably will forget. Of course, we're going to be updating you guys on us, what's going on in our life because people apparently care about us. We're going to be talking about our favorite console, kind of getting into E3 stuff, so we're going to talk about our favorite console today. Tyler is going to talk about Solo, a Star Wars movie because I did not see it. I'm going to talk about MegaCon that just happened in Orlando this past weekend because Tyler did not come with me, so we kind of...
I was too busy watching Solo.
He was too busy watching Solo, so that works. We are going to talk about Tyler's going to update on his movie board that we got here. He saw two more movies. We're going to talk about that. Best Buy is getting rid of their Gamers Club Unlocked. We're going to chat a little bit about that one. We're going to talk about Nintendo in Japan selling the Nintendo Switch without a dock. That seems kind of weird, a little over a year that it came out. But before we get into all that, Tyler, what is going on in your world today?
I think the big things for me right now are... Well, first of all, I've been watching a lot of movies. I've been catching... Like I said, we'll talk about the movie unit in a minute. I've also been watching... I've been catching up on, like, horror films and things. I've been watching a lot of horror movies recently, which most of them are complete garbage. I've had one or two that have impressed me a little bit, but, you know, 9 times out of 10... And it's weird, because as much as I love watching horror movies, it's really hard to impress me with a horror movie. I normally end up coming out really disappointed, but I keep on watching more of them. But I've been catching up on, like, a lot of horror films, and I also watched John Wick, which was, I'm not going to get into, like, a full movie review, because, I mean, that came out, like, 4 years ago at this point, but all my friends have been telling me, you have to see this, it's so good, and I just kept pushing it off, and I finally saw it, and it's, like, it's super cool. It's funny and, like, really stylish. Like, it's, I don't know if you're familiar with the movies of, like Matthew Vaughn. Do you know Matthew Vaughn's movies?
I don't believe I've seen
him. He did Kick-Ass 1 and 2.
Oh, okay.
He did the Kingsman movies. And I think he did one of the newer X-Men. He did like First Class or Days of Future Past. He did one of those, I think. But anyway, he's like, I really like his style, and John Wick kind of reminds me of that. So it's like really stylized. Like, there's a lot of like really cool shots and moments, and just the way it was executed was really cool.
Okay.
So I was really a big fan of John Wick. So I got the second one. I need to watch that one. But yeah, so a lot of movies, and also my wife and Haven and I, we are getting ready to play Legendary Encounters,
okay.
Which for those of you that are into board games is Legendary is a deck building game about Marvel. It's a deck-building Marvel game where you pick, like, your own heroes. So you make a deck of, like, 4 heroes. You know, whether it be, like, Black Widow, Spider-Man, Gambit. You know, there's, like, all sorts of different options. And you shuffle them together, and then you deal out a certain number of cards to each player. And then the basic mechanic is that each turn, the heroes get a turn, and they advance. And you don't want to have more than a certain number of villains escape. Or you don't want to have a certain number of villains, you know... hurt you, or so on and so forth. And so, you know, you have different villains, and each one has their own mechanics, but each turn you flip one of their cards and move their story forward, and at the same time you draw a certain number of cards, and you can trade in your cheap heroes for better heroes as you move on. So you're constantly upgrading your own deck with newer, better heroes while trying to keep the villains from escaping by attacking them. So it's this balance of, like, attacking to resource management.
Okay.
And
Sounds so interesting.
Yeah, it's super fun. My brothers and I have played regular Legendary, which is Marvel, a lot, but I've got Legendary Encounters, which is based on Alien, and as if you know me, you know that Alien is one of my big series.
Mm-hmm.
Alien
mm-hmm.
is like one of my favorite franchises. Like, I'd probably put Alien even above Star Wars, which, you know, we won't talk about today because I'm reviewing Solo and not Alien. But
that could be on your list. Is it on your list up here?
I think at least the first Alien is on here somewhere.
So.
Alien or Aliens is on here somewhere. And so so Legendary Encounters mm-hmm. is more, it's the same idea, but the mechanics are a little bit different. It's based on each movie. So instead of it being like a randomized thing where you have just a hero and the different, like, you know, just like randomized things, you have different scenarios. So you actually like play through the movie. And so there will be like different objectives. And you actually like focus on those as you go. And so this one's a little bit more of a story-driven experience than regular Legendary. Okay. But I've never had a chance to get it out to the table. So Haven and I are going to try to play that today.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Yeah. Always something new. Always something different. So, what's going on in Marvel? Well, I just got back from MegaCon in Orlando. It was a good convention. I got to meet Amy Jo Johnson, the original Pink Ranger. Mm-hmm. I also got to meet Veronica Taylor, who did the original voice for Ash, and that we apologize about the dog barking in the background. But no, one thing I got to say about convention, I know I kind of going to talk a little bit about this as one of the discussions, but one thing I've learned, or one thing I've noticed about conventions in general, which is not a bad thing by any means, is there's a lot more people, vendor-wise, that go and they set up and they're selling more new stuff. Like, awesome glasses like this, I actually remember to bring it today. Tyler was very proud of me. They're selling that, they sell, like, the Priller beads, they're selling shirts and hats, which is fine. A lot of people like to collect it. But then you got someone like me who, when I go to a convention, or, you know, I kind of look at it like a garage sale or flea market, there are some resellers there. And obviously, I'm always looking to add some new games to the collection or look for some old Power Ranger toys that, you know, maybe I had or lost or whatever. And, you know, I want to see some of that, but there's just not that many people there selling that anymore. And, you know, kind of sucks a little bit. If you go to, like, a littler convention, you know, maybe, or a specific, like, toy show, but if you go to a big one like that, you know, you don't see too many of that anymore, which kind of is upsetting. But at the same time, it's cool because, you know, I always like seeing people there that sell their handmade stuff, like the people who do the Perler beads. I mean, they make a business out of that. And then, of course, you're going to have the douchebag resellers. The big one that I remember, I walked around.
Why would they sell those?
Well, because they can, number one. Someone's got a dirty mind. You know, one thing I got to say, because after, when I normally go to a convention, when I check it out, I normally go to see who's going to be there, who are some of the actors, actresses that I maybe want to meet, get an autograph from. Mm-hmm. So when I my goal is when I get there, as I go right to their line, I get the autographs first, get it out of the way, and then I go and walk around the show floor.
Yeah.
So I was walking around, and there were three people, three different vendors selling video games there.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, I don't know how they do it, and if they're actually selling it. So one of them was Zelda Ocarina of Time. Okay. You know? Tyler, off the top of your head, how much do you think Zelda Ocarina of Time, loose, not box, no manual, just the regular cart, how much do you think that's worth, like, in a retail setting, if you had to take a shot in the dark?
Is it, I'm assuming, like, good condition? Like, at least the label and stuff is good?
It's in good condition, and it's the gray cart. I will say this, there is a gold cart that's worth, you know, a little bit more, but this was just a normal gray cart. How much do you think that would be
worth? I'd say loose cartridge in good condition, I would pay somewhere between 30 and 40.
A little bit high on that one. It's usually 25 to 30, okay. Give or take.
I was thinking closer to 35.
Know, yeah, you know, so this guy had it out there for $50. And then it wasn't even just that. So I was like, okay, I'll give you another one. Star Fox 64. Mm-hmm. Just again, loose car, good condition, blah, blah. How much do you think that would be worth if Star Fox 64?
That one, I think I've seen that one as low as like 10 or 15?
Pretty much. You know, when I have it, because, you know, I got to plug myself 8-Bit Game Shack on eBay, I usually sell for about 15. If someone honestly wants to offer me 10, I'm going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
This guy had it out there for $35. And then,
so, yes, it looks like he was taking normal prices and bumping them up by about 20.
Yeah, pretty much exactly what he was doing. And then there were other things, like, I was like, okay, you know, these are titles that people normally will look for. I was kind of digging through some of his common stuff, and they're all, you know, in cellophane wrap and everything. And he had one of them, and this is when I just stopped looking. He had 10-Yard Fight on the NES, a football game.
I don't even know that game.
Mainly because whenever I have it and someone buys an NES for me, I will either give it away or I'll sell it for $1.
Okay.
One of the two. He had $14 on it. For this game. So needless to say, you see more of that, which sucks, but, you know, everyone's gonna make their money.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it was still fun. I enjoy going, I enjoy seeing the people there. I obviously the autographs I want to get, people dressed up in cosplays who spend so much time on it, looked amazing. I saw a lot of great people there. I'll have some pictures uploaded on the Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram probably within the next couple days or so. I still gotta go through the pictures I did get. But again, it was fun. I'll definitely, but I don't want to say definitely, but I will most likely be back next year. And again, it all depends on who they announce. That's how I look at conventions, and I decide where to go, who they announce.
And it's cool because, like, I mean, I went the 1 year with you.
You did. In 2000. 12 or 13.
Something like that.
Something like that.
And it was fun. Like, it was a really good experience. But it is just kind of... I kind of burned out a little bit, I think, because there aren't a whole lot of people there that I'm really interested to see, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. But also... and I think we touched on this an episode or two ago. I think I've had... My experience there was not what I would call stellar.
Yeah.
Mostly just because the people that I was interested in seeing seemed kind of like jaded and tuned out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would never be opposed to going back if there were people that I wanted to, like, yeah, go talk to, or, like, autographs I wanted to get, things like that. It's just about finding that right mixture of, like, being financially secure at the time and also having people there that I'm interested in.
Yeah, and that's essentially, that's exactly what it is. Because the two, like I said, the two autographs that I got were Amy Jo Johnson, the original Pink Ranger, Veronica Taylor, the original voice actor, actress for Ash Ketchum.
Mm-hmm.
But also that was there, and I'll go ahead and tell this story. Guys like John Cena were there, the wrestler was there. Norman Reedus, who does Daryl in The Walking Dead, was there.
And I feel like he's, I've never... you know, been to an experience with him. I don't know how he is, like, in person, but he seems really keen to do all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah,
like
he does.
Anytime there's, like, a convention or an interview or anything like that, he's super keen to get in there and do it. He seems like one of those where he'd be really into, like, the fan service and, like, getting to know people, yeah, and stuff.
Yeah, Norman Reedus, you know, he's at a lot of conventions that he can. Obviously, he's got a life and a show to film, a little show called Walking Dead. I don't know, it's something. But I got to tell this story, is that when the show opened Saturday at 10 o'clock, so I walked in, immediately looked and went straight back for the autographs, just again, because I wanted to get it out of the way. So right when you go in, you know, of course, they spit you right in the vendor room. The autographs were way in the back, so essentially you had to walk straight back. And it was, you know, big, big, big convention center. It was in Orlando, Florida, so obviously.
Is it the same one we were at before?
Yeah, it was the same one. It was the same one. So we had to go straight all the way back. Where I was in Amy Jo Johnson's line, you know, she had about three rows of people at the time. And next to her, which he wasn't there that day, he was only going to be there on Sunday, was Jason Momoa,
okay,
Aquaman in Justice League. And then next to that was like a little door, and then next to that was John Cena. So mm-hmm. I was essentially within shouting distance of Cena's line. So keep in mind, I got back in that line probably about 10:20 at the latest. 20 mm-hmm. minutes after, you know, doors open, you check in, you know, they do their best. Cena's line was already maxed out 20 minutes in, probably because of all the VIPs or whatever that came in.
Yeah.
So, needless to say, I did not want to wait in that line. You know, and John Cena also, too, is only going to be there on Saturday, so there would be an influx of people that are just there to see him. And I was like, eh, it's not worth it. Surprisingly, yeah, though, I know, Tyler, you're not the biggest WWE fan. When he did come out, there were a lot of cheers and no one chanting Cena sucks, which is a norm and... everyday WWE style.
Right.
And one thing I gotta say, just to kind of wrap it up and we'll move on, we'll actually take this off because I'm essentially doing my MegaCon talk now. there was one guy there when Cena came out, he had like a violin and he actually started playing Cena's theme on the violin and mm-hmm. he did it fantastically. And about a half hour later, 20 minutes later, Jeff Goldblum came out because he was there too. And the same guy, he started playing the Jurassic Park theme on his violin, and it was absolutely fantastic. More That's people cool. were cheering for him than they were for the actual, like, Cena and Jeff Goldblum. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, MegaCon. I'd say it was a good, obviously. I can also say this now, too. With meeting Amy Jo Johnson, I have completed the original team of Rangers.
I saw that. You posted a picture. Yes, he's got all the pops.
I've got
all the vinyl
pops. I've got red, blue, pink, and black in the pops. Back when we met Jason David Frank actually at MegaCon when we mm-hmm. both went a few years ago. There was no Green Ranger or White Ranger. Well, there was a White Ranger pop, but it was retired and it was like $300, so I wasn't going to go for that. But he actually signed the Legacy Dragon Dagger. So outside of Tui, the original Yellow Ranger, may she rest in peace, I have completed the original team of Rangers and knock on wood.
Fake wood.
This November in Ranger Stop, also in Orlando, the second Pink Ranger, Catherine Sutherland, and the second Yellow Ranger, Karen Ashley, are going to be there. So as long as they don't call out or as long as they don't have to cancel, I will have completed essentially all the base Mighty Morphin team outside of, you know, the villains, you know. But also, even with that, by the end of this year, again, if everything goes according to plan, the only major autographs I'll need from the base Mighty Morphin team is the voice actor who I cannot remember right now who did Goldar, and the voice actor the original voice actor who does Alpha 5. He also did like Daggett from Angry Beavers. He did a few other ones. Again, I can't remember his name right now. But also, because also at MegaCon, Robert Axelrod, who did Lord Zedd, is going to be there. Barbara Goodson, who does Rita Repulsa, is going to be there. And David Fielding, who does Zordon, is going to be there. So come November, I'll need like two more autographs. I did meet Bulk and Skull, too. They were fantastic.
Really?
Yes, I met them last year. I mean, they are those two. I mean, every Ranger that I've met so far has been absolutely fantastic. All of them show how much they truly love their fans, you know, 20 plus years later. But there's something about Paul Schreier and Jason Narvi, Bulk and Skull, who they really embrace their role, and they really show that they still are Bulk and Skull 25 years later. I mean, they were hilarious. They were great. So yeah, that's my MegaCon talk. Let's move our favorite console down a little bit to put it with the game stuff, because there is something we forgot to put on this list that we were just talking about, because we are professionals here. Before we get into Solo, do you want to talk the Christopher Robin trailer that we were just talking about 10 minutes ago and we forgot to put on our list?
Okay.
So there's a movie coming out, Tyler, August 3rd from Disney called Christopher Robin.
Which is definitely not Happy Time Murders.
Which is definitely not Happy Time Murders that we talked about last, our trailer from two weeks ago.
If you watched or listened to the last episode, you know all of our feelings and opinions about Happy Time Murders, and none of them are good.
None of them are good.
So
none at all.
This episode we're going to talk about a trailer that at least I embraced an awful lot more.
I did too. I thought, yeah.
You thought you liked it too?
professionals, yes. I really did enjoy this because, first of all, if you don't know who Christopher Robin is, what's wrong with you? Second of all, it's Christopher Robin growing up. So he gets a visit from his friends, Winnie the Pooh, Piglet, Eeyore, Tigger, which if you don't know who they are, then I'm sorry. I guess I don't really know. I'm just sorry.
You are listening to the wrong podcast.
You are definitely listening to the wrong podcast. We are Disney fans here. So, you know, obviously Christopher Robin's grown up, you know, seems to go through a lot of harsh family time. You know, boss says, hey, you got to work the weekend. He says, I can. I'm taking the family out. It's real time people. I mean, I can't figure out how to say that right now. Mixed in with the animation, obviously Piglet, Eeyore, Tigger are all computer anime, but they look so good.
It does look good.
They look really, really nice. Tyler, please.
So what it first and foremost reminded me of, and I don't know what kind of vibe the finished film is going to be,
yes,
but at least my early impression based on this trailer is Paddington. And I don't know, did you watch Paddington?
I didn't watch it, but I've seen like snippets of it to know kind of what to expect.
And it's kind of the same idea. I mean, it's not, you know, like this, it's not like an imaginary world or anything. You know, it's not like with the Hundred Acre Wood where it's kind of like Christopher Robin's playtime or anything. Mm-hmm. It's like Paddington is supposed to be like an actual bear that can actually talk in our world, you know. But I had kind of blown it off at first because, you know, I was thinking it's just another like kids movie based on a kid's book, you know, so on and so forth, and left it. But the reviews started pouring in for it, and you know, this was years ago at this point. This was probably around like 2014 or something as well, the first Paddington came out. And the reviews were really good and everybody was talking about it. So Haven and I watched it a couple months ago, and it's like one of the most charming and adorable movies I've ever seen. Like, I absolutely fell in love with it.
So
we immediately got the second one and watched that one, and they're both just so good. And it's got like a wide appeal, you know, it's like, it has those one or two moments where it kind of goes into like kitschy kids movie territory, you know, it gets a little bit campy, but for all intents and purposes, it has a lot of like broad appeal. Like it's not just a kids movie. It's got enough like genuine heart and humor and exciting, you know, action scenes, stuff like that, that it works just as well, I think, for at least for Haven and I, as it does for kids. But no, those are really excellent, and that's kind of the vibe I'm getting from Christopher Robin right now. Is kind of like a feel, kind of like the feeling I got from Paddington. But we'll have to wait and see, I guess. All I know is it looks like it's just like dripping with just like charm and adorableness.
You know, what I'm kind of interested in, and I don't know if you thought of this and why, or maybe I'm just thinking too much into it, is they're calling the movie Christopher Robin. They're not calling it Winnie the Pooh and Christopher Robin, you know, sticking you know, there was an article I read a while ago, maybe a year or two ago, that said a lot more people recognize Winnie the Pooh over Mickey Mouse from Disney. So they're taking such a big name and not even putting it in the title, which is, again, is fine.
Yeah.
Because maybe this movie could be a mixture for kids and for us. And obviously, I'm a stickler for things. So the absolutely fantastic and wonderful Jim Cummings, who does Winnie the Pooh, was that Winnie the Pooh Tigger? You know, he's, unless they found somebody who could talk just like him, sounds like he's going to be back. And I'm really looking forward to seeing this now. At first, you know, I was like, oh, you know, maybe, you know, when it's on Black Friday for $10 on Blu-ray, I'll pick it up. But it's definitely going to be something that I'm going to go see in theaters, I think. I know that you and Haven will probably go see that one. I don't know if it'll be a week one type of thing for me or not, but definitely something that kind of inched its way up into the summertime, because really after, we kind of talked about this in our first podcast, after Ant-Man and the Wasp came out in July, that's pretty much it till the end of the year. Like, I don't know any big notable titles from late August to really next year when Captain Marvel comes out, or Miss Marvel, whatever you want to call it. But in terms of this movie, like, I think it's going to be something interesting to sit down and watch, you know, bring a family, bring, you know, obviously the kids. And it's going to be interesting to see Christopher Robin growing up. You know, obviously Winnie the Pooh's been around a lot longer than we've been alive. Mm-hmm. But it's still going to be something interesting to see, because we've gone so long without, like, a new Winnie the Pooh cartoon or anything. And to see these characters come into real life grown up, you know, maybe it'll have, like, a Toy Story 3-esque type thing, you know. The kids are growing up now. Like, Andy grew up, went off to college, had to give up the toys, which obviously is a little different because nobody really knows about Pooh or anybody. And it looks like all the major characters are there. You know, I saw Rabbit, Kinga and Roo, the Owl, obviously Piglet, Tigger, Eeyore. And, you know, one of the big things for me about movies like that, bringing them back, is that I'm always a stickler, and I've said this before, for having continuity with who voiced them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was talking when I went to MedCon, I was talking to Veronica Taylor, and I did go and see the Pokemon, the movie I Choose You, and I thought it was all right. But when I was talking to her, I told her, straight up, is like, it was good, but you're still the voice of Ash to me. And I know that Ash went through like 3 or 4 different voice actors. He went from WB to Cartoon Network, and it's on Disney Channel now, actually.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, there's that, there's money. She actually said she tried to get in just to do kind of like a one-shot with it. And, you know, and that's not saying that the voice actors who are doing Ash or anybody else now is bad by any means. But for me, it's just like, it would be going back in like 20 or 25 years if it's not on anymore and watching SpongeBob, but having Tom Kenny not voice SpongeBob.
Right.
You know, it just, it could be good. The story could be good. The animation could be good. But if without the same, like, voices that we know, you know, that's, it's just one of those things. And that's why I'm always a little bit weary about reboots when it comes to cartoons, is because, you know, you grew up with these voices on one-on. Like, I know,
like Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, well, Teen Titans Go at least still has the original voice team, as far as I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, you know, they rebooted Powerpuff Girls, and all three of the original voice actresses were like, yeah, we want to do it, we're excited. And I don't got a call. And, you know, like, even now, I'm going to kind of be a little bit of a jerk. With the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on Nickelodeon, I've heard it's very good, but they switched the voice actors around, and it's like, those are not my voice actors. And I know I'm kind of sounding, you know, a little bit stuck up, selfish, or whatever, but that's just me. That's, I gotta have that for me. Gotta have the original voices.
Yeah,
as best we can
get that.
So with that, was there anything you wanted to add on Christopher Robin? Obviously we'll talk about it after we see it, because even though I say it may not be a day one, it probably will be a day one, because I'll go with him and his lovely wife if I'm allowed, and we'll review it on the podcast sometime in August. So is there anything else you wanted to add from that one?
Not for Christopher Robin. I think I covered just the basic. I think it looks cute.
I want it. I think we all do. So do you want to talk about Solo, or do you want to talk about your movie unit? Because we're kind of in the terms of movies right now, and those are kind of more your thing.
Yeah, we can get into those if you want.
Okay.
So I'll start off with the movie unit.
All right.
I'm not going to take a whole lot of time for it. I just wanted to give you an update quick. If you've been watching, you know, I've been talking about this movie unit that either I or my wife and I have been going through, depending on the movie. You know, she'll join me, or she'll be like, I'm not interested, or that one might be too graphic, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But this week I watched The Godfather and I watched Trainspotting. And so I scratched both of those off of my scratch off poster. And
was that The Godfather one?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, the first
Very
one.
Good movie. Very good movie.
And they were both really good movies, actually. The Godfather, I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot that can be said about The Godfather that hasn't already been said. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, you could probably say about a lot of these, because also, like, Shawshank Redemption is on here. And, you know, that's another one. It's like, I watched that, like, right after I got the poster, and it's like, that's one of the best, you know, that and Godfather are some of the best reviewed movies of all time. Mm-hmm. But it was, I mean, you know, just, it's a really good movie, really good film. Trainspotting is, it's a little bit more of a niche film. It's still good, but it was, I think it's like Australian or something like that. But anyway, it's about it basically follows a group of friends that are drug addicts, and it stars Ewan McGregor. It was one of Ewan McGregor's early roles.
Okay.
And it's about him getting out of the drug game and trying to rehabilitate himself, but like his like fall back into drugs and trying to get out of that. And eventually it kind of turns into like a con movie. It kind of turns into like a, not necessarily like a full on heist film, but kind of like a con man type movie. It had kind of like an interesting twist to it. And that one was really good too. Like I said, it's a little bit more of an acquired taste. It's not going to appeal to as many people as like, you know, The Dark Knight or The Matrix or something like that. It's less mainstream. But it was a really solid movie if you give it the time to kind of grow on you. So I like Trainspotting a lot too.
Okay. So, well, let me ask you this. What on your wonderful board here would be the next movie that you would want to try and sit down with, either by yourself or with Haven?
I think there's a, you know, at first I was like, I'll just go in order. And so I watched Shawshank, and then I watched The Dark Knight, and then I watched City of God, and those are the first three on the list. But then I realized there's some of these that are going to be harder to find than others. And, like, next up is Pulp Fiction, if I'm going in order, which is easy. I've already got that. I already own that one. But, you know, there are some of these that are going to be hard to find. And some of these that, you know, I don't even know how I would access right now. And so I started thinking, maybe rather than trying to go in order, it's not like a numbered list. It's just a bunch of movies. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should just, you know, as I find these movies, I'll go ahead and watch them. And so I pretty much just started like browsing around on the different streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and stuff like that, just looking for movies on my list that were also available to just watch easily.
Okay.
And so those two came up and I watched those. I think, like I said, next up could easily be Pulp Fiction because I already own that one. But it's one of those where it's like I'm a little bit less motivated to rewatch it because I've seen it so much and I do own it. It's a solid movie. I'm not saying anything against the movie. I'm just saying, you know, I've seen it quite a bit. You know, there are other movies where it's like, I've seen them less or I haven't seen them at all that I would be more interested in watching for the first time than going back and rewatching movies that I've seen before. But, you know, there's a handful of them like, Pulp Fiction and Blade Runner and Up and The Lord of the Rings, The Lion King, Shaun of the Dead. There's a whole bunch of them, you know, I could keep going where I already own these movies and I could watch them for the umpteenth time, or I could go seek out a movie that I haven't been able to experience yet and start marking those off. So that's kind of where I'm at now, is I'm looking through like different streaming services and stuff and trying to find movies that maybe I haven't had the chance to experience yet, and then watching those for the first time and scratching them off. And then I can kind of go through a best of list later. Okay. When I've hit some of the ones that I haven't seen before, I can start going through my movies that I already own and knocking some of those out.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tyler, you know a movie that you're going to talk about that I'm going to try to talk about that's not on your list?
Solo?
Solo, A Star Wars Story. So I'm just going to kind of run down my thing. By the way, spoilers.
I was wondering about maybe not doing spoilers. I see, we've done it for the last couple.
We have.
But I'm one of those, if I haven't seen the movie, I really don't like spoilers. Like, no, it really bugs me. And so I was thinking, at least for mine, you know, like whenever we do them together, you and I just geek out together. We bounce off of each other and we talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, you know, and it just becomes like a natural rapport. But I think as far as this one being you haven't seen it, I'm thinking maybe I'll just kind of try to cover my thoughts without giving away too much.
Well, I know a little bit about it, because I was talking to one of my friends just to have an idea of it. And just so you guys know with me, like, I do enjoy Star Wars, but I'm not the super big Star Wars fan. I've seen the 7 movies. I've not seen Episode 8 yet.
You haven't seen The Last Jedi?
I have not seen The Last Jedi.
Oh.
I have not seen Rogue One, although I do have it. Thank you to Jason and Sherry for giving that to me for Christmas.
I think I kind of grouped you and I together as far as like our Star Wars fandom, like kind of how we felt.
Nice.
But I'm kind of wondering now, because I've at least seen them all. I keep up with them, and I'm kind of like, I get excited for the new ones, but I guess you're even more apathetic than I am.
Well, see, for me, and, you know, Last Jedi is one thing, and I always told myself, all right, I'm going to go this weekend, and I never did. Mm-hmm. So now I'm just waiting to find it, like, at a flea market or a pawn shop or garage sale or something on Blu-ray. And then I'll sit down and watch it. But as terms of, like, the off movies, like Solo, Rogue One, which I know I need to sit down and watch because I heard it was very, very good, and they just announced Boba Fett, like, those ones, I'm like, yeah, those are cool. Maybe if, like, you know, we have a bunch of people over, we'll sit down and watch it, I'll sit down and watch it. But I don't go out of my way to see, like, the off movies like that. But I will watch, eventually this year, I will watch Episode 8, and then I will make sure that I make time for when Episode 9, which I believe comes out right around Christmas time of next year, 2019, mm-hmm. I will sit down and watch that in theaters, because I want to see the main story. Those are the main ones I want to see.
It sounds like you might actually be a little bit more in line with Haven, because I think I'm more into them than Haven, because I grew up, you know, my family and I, you know, we all watched the Star Wars movies growing up, and we were all, that's kind of one of our, like, family things,
right,
is Star Wars. And Haven, she doesn't care as much either, so it sounds like what we need to do is you need to come over, and we will watch Episode 8 and Rogue One.
That works.
And then when Solo comes out, you guys can watch that as well with me.
Well, now that, you know, none of us, the three of us, have to worry about school anymore, that kind of helps.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so we'll go spoiler-free, although I do know some things, but...
And maybe, I might do, like, just one or two things, just to talk to you about it, and maybe I'll give some sort of, well, I guess I can't do a hand gesture. That's not going to work for those people listening.
That may not,
but we'll see. I'll try to keep it spoiler-free.
See, there was one part that when I was talking to a friend of mine who is... He is everything Star Wars. He adored... I remember when episode 2 and 3 came out in theaters. I think he saw them both. If it was not at 10 times, it was right around 10 times. I'm not kidding. He went to the theater that many times to see these movies.
Yeah.
It was... It's like he went every week, almost. Yeah. Sometimes twice. More power to him. But he did message me one thing, you know, because I did ask him, and I said, look, I don't care if you spoil it. You know, I have no intention of seeing it, at least right away. And, not really a spoiler. And then, I'm not going to say who. That kind of shocked him, but it's like, eh.
Well, so I guess at this point we should just say spoilers. You've already kind of...
I'm not going to say who it was, though. I'm going to say somebody was there from the people use their imagination.
You are so bad at this.
I really am there, so spoiler alert. Go ahead and finish up with Solo so we can move.
I don't want to. I'm angry now. If anybody that doesn't want spoilers listens to this, you have just destroyed our podcast.
Don't listen to episode 3. Just go right to episode 4 when we talk about E3. Predictions for E3. Go ahead and finish Solo, sir.
So, I liked Solo a lot. I thought it was a... It's a really solid, like, just blockbuster action movie. It felt... It tries to kind of separate itself from Star Wars a little bit. It doesn't feel so much like a Star Wars movie. It feels a little bit more like Indiana Jones to me. It feels more kind of like that serial adventure kind of style, mm-hmm. which makes sense because they're working on a trilogy. There's going to be two more of them at least. So it makes sense that they're kind of going for that like serialized adventure. And I liked it a lot as that, but I think it's also like the most non-essential Star Wars movie that I've seen where, you know, even movies like Rogue One tie themselves really tightly into the lore.
Okay.
And this one I feel like is a little bit more separated from the franchise a little bit. And, you know, it does have its connections, like you just spoiled for everybody.
Sorry.
And I apologize for him, because...
I don't.
Mike is bad about that.
Yeah. Next time we do a movie review that I have not seen, I'll just leave the room and let Tyler do it. Anyway.
But, like, you know, it does have its connections, but it doesn't try too hard to fit in with, like, the mythology or the lore. You know, it's not like you have to know all these different characters to kind of enjoy the movie and stuff. You don't have to worry about the timeline so much. It's just, it's a good solid adventure on its own. And it's like, it's
fun and fast-paced and funny, but it doesn't try too hard to be, you know, like, to fit into Star Wars really strictly. Mm-hmm. And I think some people docked it points for that. Some people, you know, some of the reviews and stuff I was reading were saying it's kind of worse for wear because of that. Mm-hmm. And they wanted it to be more important to the franchise. And I kind of found it refreshing. I thought it was really good because I didn't have to worry about that. Because, and I mean, you can testify to this because you've been going with me to a lot of them. It's like, recently, all of the movies are just like giant event movies, you know?
Yes.
It's like, with Episode 8 and with Infinity War and, you know, even the others like Black Panther and stuff recently. It's like, we go to these movies and it's like, okay, we have to remember what's going on in the other movies for this one to make sense. We have to remember all these other characters and where they are and what they're doing at this point for this to make sense. And it's like, it almost gets to be like exhausting to try to keep up with everything all the time. Mm-hmm. And I kind of really enjoyed the fact that I could go in and enjoy this movie just for what it was. Just disconnect it a little bit from the other movies and just have fun without being like, okay, where does this fit into the Star Wars timeline? And, you know, how, you know, what are the other characters doing at this point? And so on and so forth. It was fun to just have, like, a good standalone Absolutely. Star Wars movie that's just fun for the sake of being fun. Mm. And so, you know, like I said, I think some people voted it down because of that or gave it a bad review because of that. And I kind of went the opposite way. For me, it was like, it was almost more fun because I didn't have to be really invested in all of the other movies for it to be a solid film. And, I mean, it did have its certain tripping points. It focused a little bit too much on significant moments. So, like, anytime anything happens, like, the first time he meets Chewbacca, it's, like, a really big deal, you know? And then whenever they toss him his pistol for the first time, and it's, like, you see him, like, admiring his pistol. The music is swelling in the background, you know? Then a little bit later, he sees the Falcon for the first time, and, you know, there's, like, this sweeping shot of the Millennium Falcon, and the music is swelling in the background again, and so on and so forth. And it's, like, the first time or two, it was, like, hey, there it is. That's Han Solo's thing. But, you know, the fourth or fifth time it happened, it was, like, okay, guys, we get it. You're giving him all of his signature stuff. Like, not every moment has to be a significant moment, you know, like, and it didn't even bug me that they kept giving him his signature stuff. It bugged me that they were putting so much significance on, like, that shot and that moment, you know? Okay. So that kind of wore off on me a little bit after a while. There's a new robot in this movie that is only in this movie because of where we are in Hollywood right now. It's a robot, but it's like a female robot. And she is all about, like, female empowerment and equality and all that stuff, you know. So the big joke in this movie is, you know, they make, like, funny robots, like the really snarky one from Rogue One,
right,
and stuff like that, you know. And you know, they all have, like, their really strong personalities, like C-3PO and R2-D2 and BB-8 and all them, you know. They become characters in and of themselves, but normally they stay fairly contained within their world. And I feel like this robot pretty much existed to make a statement about, you know, the feminist movement and the Me Too movement and so on and so forth in Hollywood right now, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I just wish it had kind of been worked, I guess, maybe a little bit more subtle. Okay. Like, I don't mind the reference, and I think it's a good thing, you know, like, kind of that empowering message and so on and so forth. But it was like, it wasn't a reference. It was like they were constantly, like, kind of slapping you in the face with it, you know. It was like every time you turned around, you know, she was like, we have to free ourselves from the oppressors, and started, you know, just, like, going and doing her own thing. Or she would start, you know, like, just out of nowhere, she'd start, like, yelling at someone about, you know, like, we need to liberate ourselves, you know, we are against you guys because you're enslaving us, you know, so on, you know, fighting for, like, equal rights and equal wages and all this. And it seemed a bit heavy-handed.
Right.
Which, my brothers and I kind of said the same thing about Zootopia when that came out. Is Zootopia is a solid animated film. Like, it's fun and it's funny, but it's really heavy-handed about its message of, like, equality and acceptance and stuff like that. And I feel like you could get that message across without it being, like, so in your face, you know? I think there are more discreet and powerful ways to get your message across in a movie
than basically laying it out for your audience. I feel like it was just a little bit obtuse, especially in Zootopia, but also in Solo. There were a couple moments with the robot where I was like, it was almost like eye roll worthy, you know, where I'm like, okay, I get what you're trying to go for and I'm all for it, but you know, can we make it a little bit more, just can we fit it into this universe a little bit better? Yeah, not make it, it almost like pulls you out and reminds you that, you know, oh, they're doing this because this is Hollywood right now, you know,
this is a thing.
Yeah. And so the robot didn't work for me much. I know she was supposed to be kind of like funny message, but it kind of just didn't work for me. Overall, I thought it was it's a solid action movie.
Okay.
It's a lot of cool set pieces, a lot of fun, and like I said, I liked that it was kind of its own standalone thing. It didn't worry too much about where it was in the Star Wars universe until the end, where it makes like the one...
My spoiler.
Yeah, where it makes like the one real heavy connection. But yeah, that was my basic thoughts of Solo without giving away specifics.
Yeah, like when I spoiled it.
There is one death in the movie that I would talk about.
Nah, don't worry about
but
that one.
We'll see. I feel like we're going to get into spoiler territory again. But it's not like a significant death or one of those like big shockers. It's another one of those like, I kind of wanted to mention it because it kind of falls into like the Hollywood stereotype right now. Okay. And stuff. So it was another kind of like just statement about the way movies are made and the way we do things. But I'll leave that for now till either a later date or just altogether.
Well, so to wrap it up, Tyler, scale from 1 to 10, what would you give it?
For Solo, I'd probably give it like a 7.
That's right around what Rotten Tomatoes said. I think Rotten Tomatoes had 71% right before it came out.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like a
it's been dipping. Popcorn. It's been anywhere between like 60 and 70% okay. since it came out on Rotten Tomatoes.
So we'll see. Obviously, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I'm a little more interested in the Boba Fett movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's just was announced that will be coming probably 2020, 2021. So we'll see. So that's Tyler's review of Solo and mm-hmm. my one spoiler.
I'm still upset with you.
Well, we can move on to the next topic to not be upset with me.
So
real quick, we're going to talk, you know, we was like, okay,
Star Wars is a really heavy fan base.
It is really heavy. So I just like, single-handedly destroyed
I feel like
a fan base.
We might have annoyed some people with our spoilers for the other movies, but like even more than Avengers right now, I think Star Wars is a really, really like... I don't want to say like hard-headed. That seems like not a complimentary term, but you know they're passionate. They're very passionate fan base.
Absolutely,
like, even more than like the Avengers right now. I think Star Wars fans are very much you know like
I'll give you that.
We don't want spoilers. We don't want to know. We need to see this fresh.
Sorry, Star Wars fans. I didn't mean to. I'll remember that for when we review Episode 9 at the end of next year. Moving on. So we always like to ask each other questions or talk about like one random topic. Today, as we kind of get ready for E3, which we will do an E3 showing next week, something like that.
I think we're gonna do our E3 showing on the our predictions, our hopes and predictions, kind of like our pre-showing on the 10th,
right before E3 starts.
Yeah, it starts on the 12th, and we'll be doing our thoughts on the 10th, and then we'll come back that next weekend, like the 17th or something mm-hmm. along those lines, to talk about what actually happened and how close we were and how upset we are and how excited we are and so all our different thoughts about the different showcases.
But getting into that, we decided we want to talk about our favorite console. It could be anything. It could be from the PC to home console to handheld. Whatever you guys want to, whatever it is. So I'm going to let you go first, because I kind of got like a story to go in my, not really a story, I'm just like little bits so I don't go off. So why don't you go ahead and go first on this one?
Nintendo Virtual Boy.
Oh boy, I have one of those. I have one of those. It gives you a headache, all right. I've yet to be able to finish a full game of Mario Tennis, but go ahead, Tyler.
So my favorite console is the Dreamcast.
Gee, I wonder why.
I think it's, first and foremost, it was one of those like formative consoles, you know. It was like, because at first, whenever I was growing up, I grew up in one of those families where my parents didn't like video games very much. You know, it was one of those, they were very strict. First of all, they just wouldn't let me have any. I got my first, and it wasn't even like a full console. My parents let me get a Game Boy when I was in third grade. And even then, it wasn't even like, because, you know, all my friends were playing on the Game Boy Color, and they didn't even get me that. They let me get the old, like, brick, like the gray Game Boy.
They were still selling that when they came out?
No. Huh. They found it at a garage sale.
Outstanding.
And I begged and pleaded, and they broke down and let me get a Game Boy. And from there, it kind of just became like, it was like as soon as I had the Game Boy, it was like a geyser. You know, it was one of those where it was like, I could not stop. I needed everything. And my parents weren't super fans of that. And so it kind of became, you know, there's always like a back and forth where we were, you know, they put like limits on how much I could play and when I could play and stuff like that for a while. And then it never really panned out because I would always try to sneak around and play games when they weren't watching, or, you know, like I'd be up at like in the middle of the night, they'd come out at like 1 a.m. and they'd be like, Tyler, why are you back out here? And they'd get mad at me for it and stuff. And so it kind of became a little bit of like a back and forth for a while. And eventually, you know, obviously as I got a little bit older and grew up, they took those limits off and they were like, you know, as long as you're responsible for your stuff, that's on you, you know? And so I started like playing more and more as I got into like middle school, high school, things like that. But, the Dreamcast came along kind of at this like weird transitional point where it was like, they were less strict about when I played and what I played, but they still weren't like supportive of it. And so I had traded in, I think it was an original PlayStation.
Okay.
I had gotten a PlayStation and some games from, it was actually from my youth pastor at church. He had given me like this old PlayStation and a few games for it. And it was funny because he was my youth pastor, you know, and he kind of has, he has an image to uphold. And he also had a memory card that was Tomb Raider. And I don't know if you've seen it and your experience with.
But it's kind of like Lara Croft, like holding the gun, yeah, like on the end. I've seen that.
But I mean, you know, she's very buxom and curvy. You know, it's
polygonal.
Yeah, one. Yeah, it's but you know, it's a provocative memory card.
Big time.
And so he gave me like some games and the PlayStation and stuff like that. But he had this memory card and he's like passing it off and then he's like, oh wait, and he like grabs the memory card and puts it in his pocket and he's like, okay, here, you can have the rest of it. And so I had that for a little bit, but, you know, I didn't have a whole lot for it.
Right.
And at the time, I was super into Sonic. Okay. Sonic the Hedgehog was my jam. And so I ended up trading that all in to get me, like, most of the way I needed toward a used Dreamcast. And then I got the Dreamcast with a little bit of money I had earned, you know, from, like, doing yard work and allowance and stuff like that. And the Dreamcast just became like everything to me.
Right.
Not just because of like Sonic, although, you know, Sonic was a big thing. I had, you know, both of the Sonic Adventures and I played those to death and they're not even that great. Like going back, I've tried to go back and replay it because I've got my Sonic Adventure games and stuff over here. I've still got my Dreamcast and my collection of Dreamcast games. And actually I started playing Peer Solar, which I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent.
Okay.
Have you heard of Peer Solar?
I've heard of it, but I've never played it.
It was, I believe it was Kickstarter. It was either Kickstarter or Indiegogo. It's a brand new, well, not brand new anymore. It came out in like 2012, 2013,
I think that's when they were something like that.
But they kickstarted this game, but they didn't release, they released it like for Steam, but they released like limited physical copies for the retro consoles. So they released this one in like HD, which is basically just like 32-bit. It's still like a top-down RPG, but it's like a little bit nicer looking for Dreamcast. And then they released like a 16-bit version for Genesis. But they actually released them for those consoles in like 2012. That was the coolest thing to me. And my parents actually, you know, ironic since I was just talking about the way they felt about video games, but you know, they've kind of loosened up and they understand that this is what I'm passionate about. And they you know, they want to make me happy. And they bought this for me for my birthday last year, but I was so caught up in other things, you know, with college and like internships coming up and other games. And then, you know, I got Ni No Kuni 2, I got God of War, you know, things just kept piling up. And I finally just started this like a couple days ago. And so that's been a lot of fun to have like a new Dreamcast game to play after all these years. But anyway, so, you know, I've still got like my Dreamcast and my collection of games back there and stuff. But, I tried to get back into Sonic Adventure like a month or two ago, and it's not a very good game.
It's really not. I mean, I remember, I didn't play it on the Dreamcast, but I played Sonic Adventure 2 Battle on the GameCube.
Okay.
And it's just, the soundtrack was good.
Yeah, the music is good. The
music's fantastic.
And at the time, the graphics were amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
Coming from like the, you know, especially, because, you know, it was ahead of its time. And then, you know, the PS2 and the Xbox came out like a year or two later. It only had like a year or two to really shine. And I think that's really what killed it, is just because, you know, it didn't get the publicity and it was also really exorbitantly priced. I think the PS2 was like $200 cheaper or something when it came out, I remember right.
I don't remember the exact prices. I just remember, and it's the same thing that happened with the GameCube, is that both the GameCube and the Dreamcast did not play something called DVDs, which were starting to take off like wildfire at the time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people that were out there were like, why would I spend, because back then DVD players were like $500, $400, $500. People are like, why would I spend all this money on a DVD player when I could spend just as much, maybe a little bit more, and I can have a console with it and a PS2 or an Xbox.
Yeah.
I get 2-in-1. Mm-hmm. And that's also kind of what, you know, Nintendo obviously had the name with the game, with Nintendo attached to the GameCube.
And then Nintendo ended up even like doubling down on it. They never gave away. They even said, like, when they released like the Wii and the Wii U, they were like, we want this to be a games console. We don't want it to be a hybrid. And they purposefully didn't do DVD support after it was a standard.
And even it's even weird now because like the Wii U, I think the Wii U had Netflix or got Netflix. I honestly don't remember.
Yeah, it got a few of them. I think it had Netflix and Hulu.
It did. I know it had Hulu. And then I think the Switch is still waiting for Netflix right now.
Yeah.
But again, you know, going back to the Dreamcast, you know, obviously fantastic console, and obviously, you know, Sonic was. But
anyway, yeah, we got off on a whole other thing. But you know, it came
caught out, it fast that time.
It came out right at like that moment where it was like it was so good compared to what was out. Like Nintendo 64 and PlayStation are both amazing consoles, no knocks against them. But the Dreamcast was doing things that they couldn't dream of, like graphically, and also it was the first one with network capabilities. Yes, you could plug an Ethernet cable into it and play Phantasy Star Online and stuff like that. It was so far ahead of its time, and it did all of these amazing things that consoles at the time just could not and had not done. Mm-hmm. And then, like 2 years later, or maybe like not even 2 years, I don't think, the PS2 and the Xbox came out, and it kind of ruined.
I think that came out in 2001.
Yeah. 2001 for those, and
1999.
Dreamcast was late 99, like October of 99 or
September
something like
9th,
that.
1999.
September 9th?
It was like Fall of Switch of Nines, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll get blasted for it if I got that wrong. I'm pretty sure it was September 9th, 1999.
But anyway, at least for me, the Dreamcast came along at a time where it was like I was just getting more freedom with the games I was playing and kind of forming my own tastes in the game I was playing rather than playing the ones that my parents thought were okay. And so, you know, I was playing, like, the Sonic Adventures. I was playing a lot of Tony Hawk. I was playing games like... Oh, Sonic also had... It was a cheap knockoff of Mario Party called Sonic Shuffle. And it was like...
I remember that one.
It was like a card-based board game where you would also have, like, the mini games and stuff. It was a lot like Mario Party. Almost exactly like Mario Party. But it was like a Sonic knockoff. And I played a lot of that, too. But, you know, so stuff like that, and it was one of those where it came along right at the right time, and it had everything that I wanted, whether it be, like, the, like, adventure games like Sonic, or kind of the more, you know, just, like, pick it up and play for a few minutes.
Right.
Like Tony Hawk and stuff, or we had a game, speaking of Star Wars, my brothers and I had a game called Jedi Power Battles.
I remember that. That was on PlayStation 1 as well, I think.
It was on PlayStation. It was a multi-console, so it came out for PlayStation. But we played the heck out of Jedi Power Battles. We played this all the time. This was our jam. And this one's multiplayer. Like, we would actually play it together.
Yeah.
And so we would put on, like, we would turn down the sound and turn on, like, custom playlists. We would play our own music while playing this game. And I have, like, so many fond memories of playing this.
And, that's one I'll never get rid of.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like there are certain games like that that, you know, it's just like, if nothing else, just the nostalgia and the memories that I have made that system really important to me. And, you know, then whenever I was getting into, like, I've always been into RPGs since I was able to play them. But especially, you know, games like, we got, like, Grandia.
Yes.
Or not the first one. Grandia was, like, PlayStation exclusive, I think. But Grandia 2 came out for Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. And Grandia 3 came out for PS2 or something like that. But, you know, like, Grandia 2 and Skies of Arcadia and games like that were just like fantastic RPGs as well.
Power Stone the Fighter was one of them.
Yeah, you had like, I enjoyed that one. Power Stone was a fighter. You had Tekken. You had a Soul Calibur. Soul Calibur,
yes,
started
that's right.
on
that is
Dreamcast.
Right. Yep, that's a Sega thing. Sega property.
Yeah, and then like I said too, like Phantasy Star Online. It had like MMOs, and it was just like a really solid. What else?
Shenmue.
Shenmue and Shenmue 2. Some of the Resident Evil. I've got Resident Evil 2, Code Veronica, a couple of the Tomb Raider games. It's you know, pretty much anything you wanted, whether it be, you know, like adventure, RPG, sports, you know, anything like that. It was just a really solid console, and it came along at the time where I was getting enough freedom in my gameplay to really start taking in these different experiences. It was the console I had at the time that I was able to really kind of cut loose with and start expanding my horizons a little bit. And so the Dreamcast is my personal, it was the one that was like really important to me.
That was very good of you, Todd.
Thank you.
So for me, mine could go all over the place, but if I had a pinpoint, I'd probably have to say the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
When I was younger, my sister had the original Nintendo. And you know, I played it a little bit. I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I played Mario, some Castlevania, little things like that. A couple Rad Racer I played. But, you know, I just had fun mashing buttons. So I never really, like, got into the game. And then, in August of 1993, a little something called Power Rangers came out. And that was it. That's all I wanted. Christmas, birthday, nothing else.
Have you noticed that probably about 90% of the jokes you make, are you taking really big things and saying a little thing?
Yes, but that's just my thing.
You say a little thing like Power Rangers, or thing like The Walking Dead.
Eventually, I'll stop doing
that. That's pretty much your entire sense of humor.
That's my shtick.
Taking giant things and saying, oh, this little thing called, you know, The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. I've never heard of Lord of the Rings. No, so Power Rangers came out. So essentially with that out in 93, plus at the time, you know, my sister's 10 years older than I am. She was going off to college, you know, kind of doing her thing or getting ready for it. And we never had a Super Nintendo or a Sega Genesis. We kind of essentially skipped that generation, if you will. So a few years later, I don't remember exactly, it might have been 97 or 98, we got a Nintendo 64 for Christmas. You know, it was for me and my sister. We both opened it up together. There's old videos of us somewhere doing that. And I remember getting my favorite game of all time, Banjo-Kazooie. And I just remember having a blast with it. And I think that's why it stuck so much with me, is because this console was the first one that I played games and actually was trying to beat the game rather than just run around and mashing buttons. Mm-hmm. So believe it or not, Tyler, I actually, as a kid, never had Super Mario 64. I know. I don't know why either. But I never...
Well, wasn't that bundled? Wasn't that, like, part of...
No, because I don't remember the exact year we got it. When the Nintendo 64 came out, only two games came out for it, Pilot Wings and Mario 64.
Yeah.
So it had to have been later on, you know, a year or two later, because I remember... I don't know what other games we got. I just remember getting the N64 and Banjo-Kazooie at the time. And then I remember, I think it was the next year or 2 years later. I'm sorry, guys, I can't remember. I remember these specific stories more than anything else. The only thing I remember for, like, and then I've got, like, a GameCube and a Wii story, but they didn't match it to this. Like, I remember going to Sears, actually. It was either Sears or Kmart, but they're owned by the same people. And I remember getting Pokemon Stadium. You know, I remember getting that one. I remember...
You can game that so hard.
Yes, you can.
It's such a cheap game.
It really is, but it's Pokemon.
It's like, soon as you learn how to play it, it just becomes such a frustrating experience. Yeah. Because you can just, like, deadlock each other.
Rap.
And it becomes like nobody can win, wins every time.
Yep. But I remember getting that. I remember going with my mod to a store to buy Majora's Mask for my sister. And I remember... We also needed to get the expansion pack as well, because Majora's Mask needed that. So I remember that. I remember getting... I remember Christmas Eve, my grandma got me Pokemon Puzzle League. And I remember being annoyed with that one, then I got really good at it. Now I'm probably really bad again. And what else was there? Like, I remember all these wonderful games more fondly, like doing the work to get those more than anything else. And, you know, for the GameCube, I remember opening that up on Christmas morning and getting Super Smash Bros. Melee. I still have my original copy there. I remember my sister, thankfully, was very nice and showed mercy in 2006 when the Wii was getting ready to come out. I didn't have a job at the time yet. And I was just kind of doing little jobs for her. I was doing, you know, mowing the lawn for me, the neighbor, saving up money all the way through. Mm-hmm. And I finally saved up enough to get the Wii, but I didn't have enough for a game. And so she actually ordered two copies of Twilight Princess because she too got a Wii. And instead of being a dick and saying, "You're getting this for Christmas," which was like a month later, she was nice enough to give that to me right away. So that was a good memory. But in terms of favorite console, like, I just remember the 64 primarily. I just remember the games for that one. I remember playing that, and, you know, I remember having a blast with it all the way through. And, you know, I remember getting frustrated quite a bit with Pokemon. I just remember having a blast with it. And, you know, I even played some racers on there. F1 Grand Prix, which is one of the most underrated, like, street car racings. My neighbor in New York was really big into that. So I was like, all right, yeah, I'll give it a shot. You know, I was kind of going with the time. I really did enjoy it. But yeah, N64, you know, I didn't have any of the fantastic ones. I just had the very basic black console, gray controller, handful of games. Of course, we were idiots and we threw out the boxes. And yeah, that's what I remember primarily about my favorite console. And I absolutely love the 64. I mean, the Switch is catching up. Obviously, I love the Switch. But
yeah, the Switch is really good. I've always been kind of a sucker for handheld.
Yes.
Because I try to keep myself busy. I'm on the go a lot. And so, you know, it's like I'm always over, like, at friend's house or working or with my family or traveling or whatever the case may be. And it's like there are times where I think games get neglected a little bit just because they happen to be at home.
Yes.
Which is sad, but, you know, it's a fact of life after a point. And, you know, I've always been like that, even since I was a kid. And maybe it's because the Game Boy was my first console, or console, you know. It's kind of like how I got into it, but I've always kind of been a sucker for handhelds. Like, you were talking about, like, how you would get your, you know, do, like, yard work and stuff like that, trying to, like, scrounge money together for stuff. And I remember I did that for the PSP. When the PSP came out, I did yard work, like, incessantly, just, like, day after day after day of, like, you know, mowing or picking up leaves or whatever I needed to be done anywhere, like, whether it be for my family or extended family or their friends or whomever. You know, I would go out to, like, other neighborhoods and, like, my grandparents' neighborhood and stuff like that, start doing favors for anyone that would let me to save up for the PSP. And I loved the PSP whenever that came out. And the Switch has become, like, my new best friend. If it's an option, I always get it for the Switch. And, you know, obviously there are your exclusives, like, especially the big ones right now, the ones that, like, Ni No Kuni and God of War are both, like, PS4 exclusive.
Right, right.
And so it's like, that wasn't really an option. But, you know, if there's an option to get it for Switch, I immediately go for the Switch version because it has just been a game changer.
It really has.
Quite literally a game changer for me to be able to take my games, like, if I have downtime, like, between shifts at work or if I'm traveling or whatever, it's so easy to just, like, put it in my bag and keep playing.
So with that, I think this is a good transition to one of our next topics.
Yeah.
So Nintendo of Japan, we'll only talk about this for a few minutes. Nintendo of Japan is going to start to sell the Nintendo Switch without the actual dock being and trying to just push it as a handheld. See, for me, I'm one of the minorities. I actually prefer TV gaming, you know, and I have played my Switch out of the dock. I picked up a game for the PS4. I picked up Overwatch is what it was.
I made fun of you.
You did make fun of me for that one.
That's another thing is you'll quickly come to realize I am not a huge fan of, like, really competitive gaming. I like co-op. I like to play MMOs, dungeon crawlers, things like that where you can work with people, but I'm not a super competitive person. I've never gotten into, like, you know, the like multiplayer shooters and things like that. I've had my nights, you know, where it's like I'll get together with a friend of mine, Jeremy, and, you know, we'll do nights where, like, we play Halo all night or something like that. But, you know, it's like it's not really my scene. I'm not super into, like, competitive shooters or, you know, fighting up the leaderboards and things like that. It's just it's never really been me. And so I incessantly made fun of Mike whenever he started getting into Overwatch.
Well, the only reason, and I'm not going to get into it to play competitive or anything. I just got into it because it was, actually, I don't know if I told you this one. So GameStop had the Pro Day sale. It was $30. I was like, screw it, I'll buy it. And then for whatever reason, GameStop puts their weekly ads out on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And this past week, between Wednesday to Saturday, it was actually on sale for $20. So I returned, rebought it, got my $10 back. So essentially, I got it for $20. Like, all right, I'll try for that. And so I put that in the PlayStation as an install. And while that was doing, I just picked up my dock for the Switch, and I was playing Kirby Star Allies the whole time. But in terms of this discussion here, you know, Nintendo didn't say when they were going to do it. Nintendo didn't announce any maybe price cut, because I believe you could buy a dock separately now, at least here in the U.S., for right around $70 or $80. Which is...
I don't know how reputable it is. Mm-hmm. I had read that, and you know, they gave the price like in yen.
Yes.
But I believe that they said that translated to U.S. dollars, their price was going to be like $246 or something like that.
See, that, I mean, it's got to be at least $100 cheaper. And
you would think, because the dock itself you have to buy for like $100.
That, yeah. And well, that plus the power cord, because I don't believe the dock comes with the power cord as well. Yeah. So you would have to buy that separate, and that's, you know, a $20, $30 cord mm-hmm. right there.
But at the same time, I can't imagine them selling the Switch for $200. That seems really low.
I don't know. I mean, like, the thing is with that is, you know, Nintendo said this is Japan, maybe Australia. They said there is no plans for it to do for the United States as of right now. Obviously, that could change because it's Nintendo. They're a multi-million-dollar company.
Yeah.
But to me, why this is a little bit of a shocker to me, and I'll just kind of say my thing and move on, is that the console is a little over a year old. I mean, it launched pretty much globally in March of last year. So I can understand maybe a year or two down the road to do something like this, but this has only been a year and a handful of months, a year and 2 months, give or take,
yeah,
since this console's been out, and they're already doing this, which is kind of odd to me, especially for how well it's selling. I mean, yeah. The Wii U obviously sold nothing, and then, you know, the Switch is obviously, you know, Nintendo got their head out of their ass, and they produced it. You know, it's been relatively easy to find right now, which is great, which is fantastic. But I just am curious, like, why are they doing this now? Keep going with this production. Keep selling everything. Because you know people that are buying a Switch are also buying a game or two. They're either going to buy Mario Odyssey. They're going to buy Breath of the Wild. They're going to buy possibly Splatoon 2. You know, and then, mm-hmm. you know, they've got their online services coming in September. So there's no stopping the Switch right now. Like, it's not slowing down in sales. So I don't know if this is just something to pick up more sales on top of the already high sales they have.
Yeah.
Or what? But to me, it's just kind of like that random thing where it's like, okay,
I kind of I kind of went the opposite way actually. And Haven's
figures.
Haven's kind of on your side. She didn't say it as eloquently as you. I mentioned it to her whenever I was reading about it, and she legitimately just said, "Oh, that's stupid."
And walked away.
Yeah, and that was her whole opinion. That was as far as it went.
She will be on this podcast with us eventually when we have a good group of topics that yeah. she would be interested in.
But I kind of went like, I'll boot it up on the TV, like if I happen to be home and I know I can dedicate a lot of time to it. But my Switch is first and foremost a handheld. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I've noticed is like, it's interesting to me how different people use it in different ways. Because some people are saying, you know, like they primarily use it at their home. Like it never comes undocked. They have the Switch, like, you know, it's there as a console, and then they've got, like, a separate, like, docking station for their Joy-Cons and their Pro Controller and stuff like that, and they just pull those out and use them as, like, regular controllers. They never, like, slot it in, they never take it with them, like, it's a console to them. Mm-hmm. And I've also heard people, like me, you know, that are saying the opposite, where it's like, I take it on the go a lot. But then when I'm at home, I want to dedicate that time at home to my actual consoles.
Yeah.
So I kind of get in this mindset of like, if I'm traveling or I'm going to have dead time like during the day or something, I'll take the Switch with me because I know I can play it on the go. But when I come home, I want to dedicate time to either like PC or PS4 or something like that because I know I can't take those with me. Mm. And so the Switch has become like my solution to gaming when I'm not going to be home. And so when I'm at home, I kind of purposefully avoid the Switch because I know that I'm going to need it like a day or two later whenever I'm out doing stuff. And so I dedicate my home time to the stuff I can't take with me.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But, you know, I think for me why I'm a little different is that I don't always have that downtime when I go out. Like, maybe if I travel or something and I'm staying in a hotel overnight, yeah, I bring the Switch with me. Mm-hmm. But just because whenever I am out and about, you know, I don't really have a lot of time to sit and wait. And a lot of time, if I do, it's only for like 10 or 15 minutes. So I'm just on the phone playing a game of solitaire and then I'm off doing what I need to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could definitely see both sides of the argument. And I could see people, even if they sold it separate, like, okay, here's like the $300 one with the Switch with the dock and everything. And then here's a $200 one with the Switch and the Joy-Cons. Okay, mm-hmm. That I could see. You know, obviously, Sony's doing it with their PlayStation 4 somewhat. You know, they've got the 1 terabyte for $300, and then they've got the terabyte pro for $400, so they can have two.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nintendo did do that a couple years ago with the Wii U, and they had the 32 gigabyte and the 8 gigabyte. Obviously, that
and I would the same thing, I would be all over that, because right now, if you have a Switch, you basically just have to get a micro SD. There's no other choice.
But a lot of times, those micro SDs are not that expensive.
They're not that expensive. But I think it would be really cool. I bet some people would be really into buying the Switch if they could buy like a 500 gigabyte one or something instead.
Yeah.
Because it's measly. It's what, 8? 16?
Yeah, it really doesn't have anything in it, which kind of sucks. But
because there are a lot of games. You can put like maybe a game on there. But it's like there's a good probably what, 80% of the games that say, if you want to play this game, you have to have a micro SD card.
Yeah.
It's just not even a possibility if you didn't buy an SD card for it.
Absolutely. And that, and you know, thankfully they put it right out on the front. I know a couple of them are like in the sports. I don't think FIFA has it, but like WWE has it. NBA's got it. A lot of the downloadable ones. And this is something I don't understand. This could be a whole other topic we won't get into. For games that they're releasing, like they released recently the Mega Man Collection on Switch. Mm-hmm. It's two separate things. It's like, here's the Mega Man, and then you have a download code for the other part of it. I believe it was 789, yeah, or 78, whatever it was.
They did that with Final Fantasy on Vita.
Yeah, and it's like, how could you? And it's not even just that. So, like, Resident Evil Revelations, they came out with 1 and 2 on the Switch. Mm-hmm. So if you go and buy it, you've got, you know, Resident Evil Revelations 1 on the little card, and then you have a code for 2.
And Bayonetta.
Bayonetta, I'm kind of, because at the time, you know, they're like, here's Bayonetta 2, they could just say, here's Bayonetta 2, and that's it. Bayonetta 1 was kind of like that little extra bonus, if you will. I mean, they did it for the Wii U when you would get a physical disc for Bayonetta 1 and Bayonetta 2, which is now making people spend more money than they need to if they're trying to go out and buy it or sell it. But I digress on that, because again, this could be a whole other topic. We still have one more topic to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, we'll see what happens. They said, as of right now, this is not for the United States. It's mainly for Japan, maybe Australia. So we'll see.
Yeah, I am really intrigued if they'll give, like, sales numbers or something for their different SKUs. Like, the one without the dock and the one with the dock. I'd be interested in how well it's selling comparatively. Mm-hmm. Which is probably, I'm assuming it's gonna be lower, because everybody that wants a Switch is getting a Switch already.
Yeah.
But if they release it without, I'd be interested to see what kind of sales numbers it gets.
You know, and a lot of data has shown that a lot more people use it without the dock, so maybe this is kind of their thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out. So for our last topic today, and again, we'll try to do this quick.
Which is ironic, because before we started, we were like trying to slop together topics. We were trying to figure out what to do for this episode.
Right.
And we were like, well, we'll make it a little bit shorter. We'll do a couple quick things and we'll be done, you know, and we'll just make it like a shorter episode. There's nothing wrong with a shorter episode. And now we're like over an hour in.
That's why we're going to try to do this one quick. So Best Buy has completely stopped their Gamers Club Unlocked program.
Yep.
So for those of you who don't know what it is, which I'm sure majority of you do, but I'm just going to run through it real quick.
I'm even a little bit hazy on it. I never used their Gamer Club.
So it's $30 for 2 years, and you get 20% off all of their new games and accessories. Whether you pre-order it, whether you go in months later and buy it, you get 10% plus on trades and 10% off on pre-owned stuff that they sell, which I never really see any of their pre-owned stuff in store anymore. It might just be all online. But what's interesting to me about it is that how they just stopped it. And the one thing I have to disagree with some people, and again, I'm not saying I'm right by any means, is that I used to work in a mom and pop video game store. So when we would buy games, that were coming out, we didn't make anything off them. A lot of people say, oh, you made $8. We barely made $8. We would buy them for like $55, $56 and sold them for $59.99. Mm-hmm. So we didn't make anything off it. Best Buy is, if you have this program, is already taking $12 off point blank. Makes them $47.99. Amazon does it too, only if you pre-order it. Or I think if you pre-order it and then if you buy it within 2 weeks of release, you still get 20% off. Okay.
And that was, because that's what I'd always relied on. By the time that I had heard about Gamer Club, I've been subscribed to, you know, Amazon Prime for years. And so whenever Amazon started doing their discounts on new video games and pre-orders, and then I heard about Gamer Club, I was like, there's no incentive for me to do Gamer Club as long as I'm a Prime member.
Exactly. But the differences that I liked about it, and I actually took advantage of it the other day, is that I'm, you know, an old school Call of Duty fan. I don't really play the new ones, but they remastered Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare. And I was like, all right, I want to pick this up. And I couldn't find it cheap anywhere. And I was surprised because I think it came out September, October, maybe November last year. Mm-hmm. So it's still running $39.99. And Best Buy put it on sale for $29.99. And then with my discounts, like $8 off. So I got for $22, $23. So it still carries on for that. So if you still have Gamers Club, it lets you go through. I mean, you don't just lose it. So it lets you go through until it expires, but then it won't let you renew and it won't let anybody else sign up for it. And even on their website. So like I am logged in on their website under my account. And if you would look at the games, it would show you the price and then it would like cross it out with your price as Gamers Club. It doesn't do that anymore. So it's something interesting to see what their plans are for this, because I think, I don't believe Best Buy or GameStop or Walmart or Target is buying these games for $55 or so for $6. They can buy so many more titles. Mm-hmm. I mean, for us, you know, when the most we ever bought was maybe 10 or 15 copies of Call of Duty. So of course, you know, we didn't get much discount, but when a place like Best Buy can order hundreds of thousands for all of their stores plus online, they probably get a little more of a discount.
Yeah.
How much? You know, who knows? Maybe they're paying $45 mm-hmm. per title, something like that. Maybe 40. I don't know. I don't plan to know. I'd like to know, but I'm not exactly going out searching for it. So what this was is essentially a loss leader for Best Buy. And even for me, like, I enjoy going to Best Buy. I like Best Buy. They got good sales. A few times, like, they wouldn't let you combine it. Like, one of their big ones, which I can understand, is they didn't let you combine your Gamers Club Unlocked with Black Friday deals.
Yeah.
So that was point blank. And then you couldn't price match and then also get it. So say Target had a game on sale for $40, Best Buy didn't have it on sale. You could go to Best Buy and get a price match for $40, but you don't get the $40 plus the 20% off. You can have it for one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like, whatever. But no, it's interesting to me that they're getting rid of this. And then Amazon's like the last major one, especially if you pre-order it, you know, you get it the day it comes out. You don't have to worry about it. And it'd be interesting to see what Best Buy comes up with. And then on top of that, you know, I don't think Amazon would truly get rid of it, but now they have no competition for it. And yes, you know, everyone, you know, moving to digital, blah, blah, blah. I don't care what they say. Digital is coming for some things, but if you look at sales for games, movies, but you know, you still see a lot of these stores stocking up so much and still selling very, very well. So I don't think it's coming as fast as most people do. I believe the next console generation will still have something physical because that's what people do want.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Obviously, Best Buy, I'm going to make sure I utilize my Gamers Club. So I was just there the other day, I bought Call of Duty and I bought Neo on PS4 as it was on sale for $20. And then I got my 20% off, so $15, $16, give or take. But we'll see. You know, Best Buy, be interesting to see what you guys come out with next. If you revamp anything, obviously they've done well. I know some people don't like Best Buy, but in terms of adapting with the times, long story short, that's why they're still here. In places like Radio Shack and Circuit City, or Circuit City's online. Radio Shack's pretty much, if there's any stores left, they're pretty much gone. And then they deal with cell phones more. I think they've combined with Sprint, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. What could this mean for Best Buy selling games? I mean, Best Buy already stopped selling CDs, or was getting ready to stop selling CDs. Could Target start something new? Could GameStop probably won't. You know, they do the Elite Pro because they focus more on the pre-owned side of things. But what if GameStop started doing something like, if you pre-order the game, you get 15 or 20% off, kind of like doing Amazon S thing. If you pre-order it, you get it, you know, kind of incentivize them to come to that store. And the reason why GameStop pushes for these pre-orders so much is because if you have in the back of your mind, oh, well, I've got, you know, the new Call of Duty, the new Battlefield, or whatever, pre-ordered at GameStop, I'm going to keep going there while I'm binding my time for these couple months looking for the pre-owned stuff, so it keeps them coming back. And obviously, everybody wants a deal on everything, but, you know, we'll see. You know, and obviously that could be part of their subscription service. Maybe that could be, you know, it's $30 now for a year for their Elite Pro. Maybe they could do something like $40 or $50 for this 20% off thing, and it could be a year. It won't be as good as Gamers Club, but at least it'll be something that's there.
Yeah.
So that's all I have out of time. I don't know if you have any thoughts. I know you said you use Prime more, but...
Yeah. I mean, it sounds good to me.
So, well, we'll see, Best Buy. Obviously, guys, make sure to take advantage of anything that you still have your Gamers Club for.
There is... just while we're talking about all that.
Yes.
Amazon Prime is raising their prices, too.
$120 now.
Yep.
$120. So, I mean, for me, I have bought stuff on Amazon here and there, but it's kind of getting to the point now where it's like, do I keep doing that? I mean, obviously, how many games do I buy a year to justify this $120 price? It's at least with Gamers Club, you buy 3 games in the course of 2 years, it's already paid for. And that doesn't count any accessories that you might buy, extra controllers, if you're buying a game for a friend, for a birthday or Christmas or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes down to it. And so we'll see there. We'll see there. I remember Prime, when I first was starting early, I think it was like $70 or $80. Then they moved it to $100. Now it's $120.
Yeah. And I was using Prime Student. So I was getting it for like $40 for a little bit. And then I did a couple years where it was $50. And I finally just got kicked off.
Yes.
Because you're only allowed to do it for like a 4-year degree. Any more than 4 years and they won't honor it anymore. And they didn't tell me that. They're not good about like explaining that to you.
Yeah.
Because I ended up just getting charged full price 1 year and I didn't understand why. So I went on and, you know, contacted support and I was trying to get it figured out. And they were super cool about it. They even ended up giving it to me.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they were like, you know, we're sorry we didn't explain it well. You know, we'll give you your $50 price for this year. And I wouldn't have even cared if they had just said we only do it for like a 4-year degree and we bumped you up because you were done with your 4 years. I would have been like, oh, okay, you know, and I would have moved on. But it was super cool of them that, you know, they were like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't, you know, we should have been more clear about that. And they gave me the next year for $50. But I just got into my last year of $100. Back in like April, and so I'm thinking this might be the last year I do it because it's getting like really exorbitant. And at the same time too, I've stopped using Amazon as much just because money, because you know, there was a period where it was like every day I'd have packages showing up, and it just, you know, it was like, it's such an easy thing to use that it almost becomes like its own trap. You end up buying things you don't need and buying things like just because you get like the free 2-day shipping and stuff, and prices are a lot of times better on Amazon, but it ended up becoming like an excuse for me. You know, I started like buying things that I didn't really need just because I'm like, ooh, look, it's like $5 cheaper than it would be in stores. And so I just like go ahead and get it. And so I've been scaling back a lot and like being harder on myself about like my finances and what I've been buying on Amazon and stuff. So I think this might be the last year I do it if the price is going up anyway, because it's going to stop being worth it. I'd rather just pay like the $3 or $4 when I do really need something from Amazon.
And even then, too, I think, I believe Amazon has a deal, which a lot of people would use around Christmas. You could buy, like, a month for, like, $15 or $20 for Amazon Prime. So right around November, December, just to do that, get everything you need in one shot, call it a day.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, so we'll see if Amazon keeps this going now that they don't have to really worry about it. We'll see if another retailer jumps up. And I guess with that, I think that's everything we have for the docket today when we try to make less than an hour and we're at like an hour and a half. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for watching, listening. However, we are on episode 3. We're working on a lot of big things, trying to get this up on iTunes now, I think we can do. And then we got 3 episodes.
Yeah, 3 episodes. So and now we can make it like, now we can get into the big leagues.
We're trying.
Start doing like iTunes and Spotify and stuff like that. So
yes,
I'll start posting new links and things once I get all that set up.
And we're still working on, I've got pictures I'll be posting in a couple days from MegaCon, things that I was able to snap pictures of. Mm-hmm. And just keep coming back to us, guys. Like I said, our next episode will be in a week or so of E3 predictions, and then right after that, you'll get a twofer. Instead of taking a week off like we normally do, we'll do E3 predictions, and then the next week we're doing the
results,
just so it's fresh in everyone's mind. Then we'll take a week off and kind of get back to our normal every other